Cameron letting us watch another episode of G1 today. Good dub for the Transformers fans in the room, me and Athena.
Star Wars. Transformers. Godzilla. Animation. Whatever else. Rebels. Robots, and etc.
It is Wednesday night, and Rachel and Cameron are hanging out yet again, which must mean that it's Starformers night. Welcome to Rebels and Robots and etc. episode 55. I'm Cameron.
I'm Rachel.
And this is our normally bi-weekly chat about Star Wars and
Transformers,
but also
yeah.
I threw you off a little bit.
Yeah, Godzilla. Godzilla animation and whatever the heck else we want to talk about. Yes. That sometimes goes into video games and at some point one comic.
Whenever we feel like we've promised it for 2 months now.
Yep.
We'll get to it eventually. And yes, yeah, so that's the all
we'll,
the
we'll get to the comic after Cameron says we can watch Transformers Prime. Which means never.
Oh, never. Mm. are not doing any ongoing series, so we didn't even mark it last week. We are done with Bad Barch Badness. It's over.
I thought we just kind of assumed that because we talked about the finale.
But we didn't like commemorate the ending of Bad Barch Badness.
Speaking of Bad Barch Badness, I actually had a thought from last week. Oh. So we're not done with it yet.
Oh, not. We are in the epilogue of Bad Barch Badness.
Yes, post-thoughts.
So we'll get into our typical opening segment, which is news and recent thoughts, in a second. Then after that, we will talk about, briefly, we talked an episode of G1 today. Got some fun observations from that, some more animation errors and the like. And then today's main subject is we will be talking about all 6 episodes of the recent animated miniseries, Star Wars Tales of the Empire. It's a relatively light week compared to all the stuff we've talked about recently.
A shorter episode?
This is a light episode before we go on a 2-week hiatus because I will be out of the country. And then we will be back on June 4th or June 5th. We haven't quite discussed yet which day we'll record for the first episode of...
First 2 episodes of Acolyte.
First 2 episodes of Star Wars Acolyte. So get ready for it. So, Rachel, what is your lingering thought about the Bad Batch series finale?
I have one news, and it's this.
Oh, we're going to do news first. Okay.
Sorry. I have one piece of news, and all it is that my Star Wars Black Series, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order 3-pack came in the mail like a month earlier than it was expected to. So we got Second Sister, who's an Inquisitor. We got Cal Kestis Inquisitor Vision, which is something a lot of people have been asking for, me included. And then another Purge Trooper, and the Purge Troopers always look pretty sick. So that's like the most important news that I have today, and actually the only news. Do you have any news?
So I just did a quick Google search. Oreo Special Edition Star Wars cookies.
Oh, shoot.
They've got dark side and light side. So you've got blue and green, not green, blue and red colored. I don't think
they're
different
flavors. Oh, I have been seeing people who have been finding the blue milk.
But so they've got Darth Vader and Luke printed, engraved. Not, you know, on the cookie, like etched into the cookie. Oh. But look how simple Luke is. He looks like an emoji.
He looks like a me. He looks like a me character.
A wee me.
Yeah, a wee me.
That's so good. Because, like, obviously Darth Vader is actually pretty easy to do a simplified version, but trying to do a simple version of...
Oh,
like,
it is Darth Vader?
This is Darth Vader over here.
Okay, you said Darth Maul at first, oh, I'm pretty sure. I was like, okay, that's an odd,
like, if
fun.
You just showed this to someone, they'd be like, why is there a dude's face on this cookie? Like, it's not, there's nothing unique about just Luke's face, especially put this simply. Like, there's so many iconic Star Wars characters you could put on here, and they chose Luke. I love that.
Just
I love
a
that
guy,
so much.
Just a dude.
So that's the first hit on Google here. Go ahead and share your Bad Batch thought.
All right. So I was thinking, I did a lot of driving last week across the state, so I had to be alone with my thoughts for a while. So this was actually, it was after we'd recorded. So one thing that I was thinking about with Bad Batch, and you had talked about how season 3 felt really different from even 1 and 2, and I really feel like season 1 had a very starkly different approach than seasons 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think especially because we kind of had that established first season and we're like, okay, so what are the next, you know, Kamino is destroyed. There seems to be some bigger plots that are going to take root and that we thought were going to happen. You know, what's next? And so one thing I thought of was, because in my opinion, after season 1, there seemed to be a lot of open threads into bigger goals, plots for the Bad Batch to get into. But season 2, in my opinion, felt very limited because for the first half, the Bad Batch is still helping Sid. And you kind of have these, I want to say random episodes, but very, very low risk episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering, so we have talked in the past how Lucasfilm has been can be very reactionary to feedback.
Sure.
So part of me really wondered if Disney was not expecting, at least, and I don't know, I don't know, I'm on social media quite a bit, so I don't know what you see. But from what I was seeing after the Bad Batch came out, like an overwhelming positive response to this. And at least in the circles I was seeing, an absolutely massive response and desire for character expansion. And this like kind of found family aspect I love that trope. And sure. So part of me wonders, at least in my observations, and you can correct me if you think elsewhere, I feel like seasons 2, especially season 2, and then season 3, felt like to me like they couldn't decide whether they wanted to do tiny character developments or large plots. So sure. Part of me really wondered if they had an overall like general sized plot, but then this very large reaction to, no, we actually want like the everyday found family thing, and Lucasfilm didn't know how to balance that.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, you know, it is speculation, but I think it's decent speculation. I was actually finishing up listening back to last week's episode earlier today, and you said something similar to that last week, and I definitely agree, at the very least, with the show reads as they couldn't land on an idea for the scope. They were most episodes were too small, detailed, very episodic, very miscellaneous mm-hmm. adventures. But then the seasons themselves were trying to construct a larger plot,
mm-hmm.
which to me indicates a lack of decisive decision making.
And not to praise Rebels again, but
we will do it.
As we probably talked about last week, because we've talked in the past, Rebels spent that first season having the miscellaneous. Granted, there are some, you know, fun episodes in all of the seasons, but like watching the first season really kind of narrowed, like drove in a lot of those miscellaneous episodes, allowing you to see this brand new group of characters interacting with each other for the first time. You have, the random episodes that don't seem to particularly have a bigger plot other than let's mess with the Empire on the Fall. And then things kind of start to pick up towards the end, especially with the appearance of Vader in the last episode. But I think it works because Rebels put that in the first season,
mm-hmm.
we have our established characters and it's easier to watch them grow. And then they were able to implement these larger plot lines through seasons 2, 3, and 4. But overall, they still kept to the same goal, which was liberate Lothal. But mm-hmm. I feel like because Bad Batch season 1, I don't think it was as character focused. It was really all focused on escape the Empire, stay hidden, which is not a bad thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like trying to then after establishing, obviously, the Empire destroying Kamino and the evidence of the clones sets up for a, and with Crosshair with the Empire, sets up for a lot of really big plot lines. And then I think to revert back to just like kind of singular character driven episodes, I think kind of cut the momentum, I think, of the show.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you for listening to my
TED Talk. No, I totally agree. Yeah, I think given, you know, a few weeks since you watched it, you've had a good time, a chance to think about it, and I totally agree with that. I feel like I had a thought as well about the show as a whole as I was listening back to our episode, but I don't really have any new thoughts to add.
Athena, what do you think? She's got her paw under her head right now. It's very cute.
Just a small piece of news, just to quickly throw out there. The next Legendary Kaijuverse movie has been announced in the writing process.
Oh.
So, obviously, there's a lot of steps between now
and I hope it's a Godzilla film. I want more Godzilla-centered.
Yeah, they specifically said follow-up to Godzilla X Kong, so it'll theoretically be another one like that. Yes. But who knows?
Godzilla XX Kong.
With how tight within the production time they were on actually getting the rights to certain characters in this previous one, I wouldn't doubt if something similar happens and it could end up just being a Kong movie or any direction. Who knows? Who knows? I hope it's just continues to be entertaining because the whole series has been for the most part.
We'll see if Legacy of Monsters still has no impact on the actual
almost certainly not
movies.
So today,
oh my gosh, worst case scenario, they do a new movie and it's the Legacy of Monsters cast.
That would be very funny, in my opinion. It would make all of it worth it. So today we watched an episode of Transformers G1 called Trans Europe Express, which very simply is the Transformers part partaking in a race across Europe. Which is actually the ruse.
Starts in France, which is the worst place.
A quote I have. So they're like, for some reason, been sent to protect this American racer. I don't know why they're protecting him.
No, I don't think they're protecting him.
That's what they said.
Obviously sent us
to protect him.
What was he doing this episode? He's like taking a nap. Yeah.
It is always weird when you don't have the leaders. It's like they've been sent. I always assume that Optimus is annoyed with these characters and has just sent them away.
Get them out of the house.
Uh-huh.
You know, like when you were a kid and you're like running in and out. They're like, in or out, make a decision.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's like, you're going out.
But this American racer.
His car was made with like some new metal or something.
I guess. But that.
I wanted to watch this because we have a friend of ours that desperately loves F1 racing.
But this is definitely not F1, though.
I don't know. I think it was the same.
But
So they're racing for charity.
Yes.
For $20 million.
But this driver, who, do you remember his name? I couldn't.
No.
Let's see. I'm looking at the
he looked like he was kind of from
TF Wiki.
He looked like he was from Speed Racer, though.
Yes. He had very big Speed Racer vibes.
Chiseled jawline.
Okay, let's see. Augie Kane.
Oh, Chennai.
Chennai. So Augie is his name, and his whole thing is that he's selfish. That's the whole character's, like, literally, that's it. That's, like, every single line of dialogue does not let you forget about this this personality trait. Like, his first quote.
Don't forget, this guy's greedy.
It's like the first thing he says is, I only care about one charity, me. Which is just top-notch writing.
Same energy.
Of course, the episode is full of phenomenal animation. My favorite being the really... There was multiple examples of really bad looping of backgrounds. So you have, you know, it's like a side shot of the cars driving, and they're staying in place relative to the camera, and the background is moving. But instead of, like, looping seamlessly, it would just have a hard cut. The background was hard cut back to the beginning of the loop, which I loved. We had a good laugh at, so the Autobots kidnapped this archaeologist and...
The Decepticons.
Oh, yeah, sorry. The Decepticons.
So the other plot line, so the Autobots are racing. The Decepticons are trying to find this...
The pearl of something. The pearl
pearl
of Bahudeen.
Yeah, this Pearl of Bahudeen. And so they are bullying, like, the population of Istanbul. And
Istanbul,
then they...
Istanbul, no confidence, no I didn't mean to throw you off that bed.
And so they kidnap some poor archaeologist off the street. It's not explained where he comes from, but he's
they're like, we need an archaeologist, and then it cuts and you think this is going to be like a majority of the episode is them finding this archaeologist, and you I just assume the Autobots would be defending him, and then it cuts back and they just have an archaeologist,
and they're out in the wilderness of Turkey with an archaeologist with a metal detector. And he's trying to explain, I don't know if he's explaining the history of it or he's trying to explain something. And just their interaction, their disdain for this archaeologist is just really funny. So they allegedly, I want to know how it's like one of those little beach metal detectors that people find to go like find rings and keys on the beach.
Yeah.
And he detected it like what? That's probably like 200 feet down because that excavator had to... dig for the excavator Decepticon had to dig for it.
Mm-hmm.
But so one of the best scenes is they have the archaeologist in these like energy handcuffs, and while the Decepticons are like monologuing, the archaeologist bumps their machine. I don't even know what machine it is, but
it's like a lamp.
Yeah, it's like a lamp, and it like sets off this energy wave, and he sticks his hands underneath it and it breaks the handcuffs. And it cuts out to a wide shot of, I think, Megatron and Rumble. And in the background, there's a mountain. And you just see the archaeologist scrambling up and over the mountain to escape. And no one sees him leave.
It's silent. And in the foreground, you have the Decepticon. And in the background, you just see him silently scuttling off. And it's genuinely funny. I love it.
It was just... lots of good laughing moments.
Yeah.
So the rest of the episode is the Autobots racing from French to Turkey, from France to Turkey, and then the Decepticons trying to stop them.
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite moments, and there's two great moments in this. One, Bumblebee, I guess, gets injured, and no one says, or it's not implied that he can't transform back. But I guess he can't because he jumps on another Autobot who's the same size as him and is in robot form riding on the back of this other Autobot who's in car form, which looks hilarious. The other, the crowning jewel of this episode is it cuts to a map of Europe.
I think you mean the crowning pearl.
Yes, the crowning pearl. Very good. This is a bizarre map, and it's hard to know whether this is intended to be like a slight, like the Transformers universe.
A parody of Europe.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I don't know if it's meant to be it's meant to be slightly different from real Europe to establish its fictional status.
And the reason it's in there is because they're doing like an Indiana Jones thing where they're tracking them through the countries.
Or it's just because this is a cheaply made Japanese cartoon and they didn't translate the country names well to English. Here's our top four. Romania, Rumania. Bulgaria instead of Bulgaria. Czech instead of Czech Republic. It's C-I-E-C-H.
And you can see where they scratched something out and we think it was an H.
Yeah, like we think that they originally had it as C-H-E-C-H. Czech. And then my favorite, not technically this is also very clearly handwritten, and there's a space between the G and O in Yugoslavia, so it's Yugoslavia. So that gave us a good kick.
I went to Google something, sorry, and I just got an article from Screen Rant. All 10 ways the Bad Batch has changed the Star Wars galaxy forever.
All bad things, I'm sure. A side note here, a voice acting side note, there's a voice actor named Terrence McGovern. He's the voice of Wild Rider, a Decepticon in this. He was an actor in the first two George Lucas films, THX 1138 and American Graffiti. So this is kind of a cool connection to Star Wars there. And he also did a voice on multiple cartoon retellings of Bible stories in the 80s, and his character's name was Derek in all of them. Now, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm a biblical scholar, but I don't remember someone named Derek in the Bible, so I don't know what's going on here. But there's that. We also just, I don't even know who he plays. Who is he the voice of? This man was the voice of the original voice of Skeletor. And in this, he is the voice of Breakdown. His name is Alan Oppenheimer.
Are you being for real?
I am for real.
Hmm.
I could not find if he was at all related to the famous Oppenheimer or not.
Also, apologies if apparently my neighbors has decided to start vacuuming.
So enjoy this vacuuming ASMR podcast for the next hour.
They don't normally vacuum. Well, I don't know why they're vacuuming on a Wednesday. They always vacuum on Sunday afternoons.
This guy was also the voice of Launchpad McQuack in DuckTales.
Which one? Which the old one or the new one?
The original DuckTales.
DuckTales. Woo!
He
and the dogs are barking now too. Oh, this is the worst.
Nightmare. And he also did a voice in the Star Wars Episode 1 racer video game. So this guy's all over the place with all sorts of I don't know about iconic. And also in the video game Star Wars Jar Jar's Journey, he played Clam. Oh, he also did Admiral Akbar. This guy's got range.
Of all the niche things we've talked about.
Oppenheimer? He's done multiple Star Wars video games.
Star Wars video games?
He normally just plays a Jedi Knight or a Stormtrooper or like really generic characters, but then he'll also play Admiral Akbar. And in NFL 2K2, he played Dan Stevens. I don't know who that is within the context of that game, but Dan Stevens was the name of the kaiju doctor in Kong, Godzilla X Kong was the actor's name. Well, this has been a fun little tangent, but back to the episode.
Back to the seriousness.
Yes. I have a quote written down here. One Autobot says to another Autobot, "Blue Streak, let him have it." And then Blue Streak says, "Such senseless violence," and starts shooting. They had not. Is Blue Streak, I don't know. I don't know Blue Streak. Is he normally a pacifist? Because there was no, this character did not have like any other point in the episode where he was like non-violent. But this, in the climax,
I don't know,
made this really unnecessary comment.
I don't know. But here's the one thing. Between France and Turkey, like 6 or 7 Autobots start out in the race and like 3 of them get stomped by the Decepticons. So only like half show up for the final like battle. So they're going to have to go like, I don't know, like, peel their friends off the asphalt on their way back home, I guess.
True. Well, I was reading about Blue Streak. It says here on the TF Wiki, he hated war, he still does, but ever since he hated Decepticons even more. It is odd to see a bot of peace so willingly take up arms, but Blue Streak's got a score to settle. That really, what I'm guessing is they got to the end of the episode and whoever's like in charge of like the lore was like, this is, there's no personality to Blue Streak. You need to emphasize the fact that, and so they just, I think they just dropped in a random line of dialogue to a very random scene.
If you see me looking over the side, for the listeners, you know, I just have an opportunity to do something very funny. Athena is in a bag, and I have an opportunity to throw a pen at her to see her reaction, but I'm not going to do that because it'd be very loud for the audio.
And then the final quote on his summary, it says here, earlier was talking that he's a chatterbox, which again did not align. Like, he talked as much as any other character. Everyone talks a ton in Transformers. A lot is a lot.
Certified yappers.
It says, talk may be cheap, but it keeps him sane. That's a good slogan for this podcast, I think.
Ouch.
What else? What other notes you got for this episode?
So they're looking for this pearl because apparently it used to be a power core for a Decepticon weapon that could control the weather, and then it crash landed on Earth because what else do you do on Earth?
Yeah, what else do Decepticon, what, like, does auto or
Transformers,
okay, I'm sure we've talked about this before, what is the term for all of them, all the, are they all autonomous robotic organisms, like because we call them humans call them Transformers.
Cybertronians,
yes. All Cybertronian technology that leaves Cybertron eventually ends up on Earth every single time.
And it crash lands. It crash lands conveniently.
And it's like a very...
It's not like Mars or something.
This like the simplicity of the animation makes it so funny. It's just this big ship just careens behind some trees and then disappears from sight and explodes.
Megatron's giving this monologue, this info dump in flashback form. But it apparently controls the weather, and apparently when it landed, or they found, when, I don't know, humans, like, was it like 1400 BC? They found, or
let's say 1600, somewhere in there.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They found it, accidentally activated it, and it like destroyed hundreds of cities because it screwed up the weather.
I wonder, is that like possible it's a reference to a real thing that like a storm destroyed some real cities or something, and they're trying to explain that this real thing that happened, because it feels really odd. It could just be totally made up, but I would be surprised if they're like referencing a supposedly real event and are explaining that it was, in this universe at least, caused by...
Well, apparently California had a mega flood in 1605. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe there is information.
You know, it's the 14th century, so it's the 1300s.
I was correct. So
my last note's at the very end of the episode.
Okay, so
we also do not need to recount the detail. The plot,
I
want to
know about
detail.
The weather history from 1300 to 1399 AD.
Okay, well, I'll get us to the end here then. They do what they always do. They fight the Decepticons. They send the Decepticons running. They win. They destroy the Pearl. And then the big thing of the episode is the racer, Augie. He has a change of heart, and he very hilariously... What was the name of the really big... like a combiner?
Minasaur
is about to kill the three Autobots in the battle, and Augie drives his car off of a cliff, and in a very funny shot it cuts to the combiner. He turns and the car just goes straight into his face and explodes, and Augie jumped out the last second. He's on top of the cliff, and this cliff is probably three times the height of an Autobot, so that means it's like probably like 10 stories, and the Autobots walk up to it, and Augie just jumps off like it's nothing.
Okay, are you ready for this, Cameron?
Yeah.
Some of the most vivid accounts we have from the Middle Ages are those that detail calamities and natural disasters. Such was the case when a massive winter storm struck northwestern Europe on January 15th, 1362.
Uh-huh.
In England, this event would be called, quote, the Great Wind. While the Great Wind of 1362 damaged buildings and terrified inhabitants of England, the storm had a much more deadly impact on the Netherlands, Germany, and Denmark. This day was called Grote Mandrenka, which means the Great Drowning of Men. Along the coasts of these countries, storm surges sent floodwaters that washed away towns and villages, leaving tens of thousands dead.
Love it.
Oh my God.
Sorry, I'm scrolling through the page here, and they have the map, the Europe map. I'm now reminded that when we searched the name of this country, C-I-E-C-H, which is seemingly a misspelling of the Czech Republic, the only reference to it as a country is a TF wiki page. So these either misspellings, if they are indeed misspellings, they become canonically the name of these countries in G1 lore, which is so funny to me.
Black Monday refers to Easter Monday, the 13th of April in 1360, so called after a freak hailstorm killed over 1,000 English soldiers during the Hundred Years' War between English and France. It's not funny. It's not funny.
Here's what is something that's very funny. In the TF Wiki page for this episode, there's a section called Geopolitical Errors. Istanbul is drawn as though it were medieval Russia with lots of onion dome towers. Paris is shown with Paris is shown with a number of skyscrapers around the Eiffel Tower. In real life, almost everything in the city is six stories or less.
Hey, we know someone who's been to France. who listens to this podcast.
Yes. Well, he's been on a guest on the show, Caleb. I did not catch this, but this is really egregious. The Arc de Triomphe is shown as a regular intersection. It actually sits with a famous roundabout, incredibly world famous roundabout. Wheeljack says it's 2,000 miles total. Because we are nitpicking, we'll point out the actual route is closer to 1,600 miles. The map of Europe is very inaccurate. Love it. Quote here is, as once everything settled down, one of the Autobots concludes that the race was all a fake to get Augie's car to Istanbul because they needed some metal from it. This is a quote from one of the Autobots.
I don't think the Decepticons even cared about the car.
They wanted the metal.
They did want the metal
from the car. There was something in the engine that they needed in order to control
the...
This is the quote. Megatron must have orchestrated this whole thing. That must mean there's no money for charity. Just such an on-the-nose quote. I loved it. And then Augie decides to... He wants to take... Initially, Axe is going to take the pearl for himself, but then he decides to give it to them so that they can sell it and then give that money away to charity.
They destroyed the actual, like, power core, so now there's, like, this gilded cover that's, like, encrusted with jewels and gold and stuff. And so the funny thing about this is that, he gives the casing back to the Autobots. He's like, you can do something like this. And he just walks off into the Turkish wilderness.
By himself? Yeah, didn't even think about that. That's good.
They didn't even offer him a ride home.
Oh, and that reminds me of the Autobots have no idea what's going on with the Decepticons. They're just doing this race. They get attacked, but like that, they're kind of used to that. They don't know there's a plot. And one of them ends up in a mountain, and he just finds the scientist, the archaeologist.
Yes!
And he just randomly, and that was great, because he's like, how long has he been out in the wilderness?
How has he been running? Like, he truly, so funny. Some of the best human characters in this franchise. Augie and the archaeologist.
Oh, didn't even think about this. Bumblebee very specifically destroys the pearl.
Yes.
And then they just have it again. Like, he shot it and it exploded.
I just said this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I totally missed it. What did you say?
So, when we first see the pearl, it's the casing.
Yeah, yeah.
At one point, they drop it, and the casing breaks.
Uh-huh.
And the energy core jumps out.
I see. So, it's the casing is what they were going to say. I see. I'm sorry. I missed you say that.
It's okay.
This TF Wiki page is full of information.
Cameron is lost in the sauce of TF Wiki.
This is what you get for one, introducing me to TF Wiki, two, feeding me spicy mayo with my dinner. You're lost welcome. In that sauce too.
You're okay. Welcome. Because apparently we're coming up on the summer shortage.
You're salty about that.
I am salty about that.
Okay. On to Tales of the Empire. A continuation, theoretically, of... We previously had Tales of the Jedi, which was a similar miniseries done...
Anthology series.
Mostly in Clone Wars style, though I would say there are certainly distinctions, even if not for just improvement in budget.
Ooh, I was just going to mention something about that.
Oh, go for it.
No, I mean, it's in my thing.
Okay. So you have two halves of this series. You have three episodes showing different parts of the narrative for Morgan Elsbeth, who was, she was briefly a villain in Mandalorian season 2, and then she later comes back as a primary villain in Ahsoka. She is an Imperial Remnant leading the charge to bring Ahsoka back.
Thrawn.
Thank you. In Ahsoka, in the show Ahsoka, she wants to bring Thrawn back. So let's talk about that. Just generally, she grew up on Dathomir. It starts with... there's a term for this event, the Purge of Dathomir.
I don't know, like massacre.
Oh yeah.
So, sorry.
No, go for it.
So after, in Clone Wars, after Ventress tried to assassinate Dooku with the help of Savage Opress, Dooku then ordered the extermination of the Dathomirian witches. Mm-hmm. And so the episode starts off with that, which is very interesting because this is like, oops, I dropped a pen. The first time that I think we've seen it outside of referencing in probably comics and in Jedi Fallen Order.
And then, so that's the first episode is that. The second episode is her It cuts to after the Empire's taken over. She's working for the Empire. She is the I don't think we knew this previously at all. She was actually the one who came up with the idea of the... There's a particular kind of TIE fighter that we see being constructed in Rebels.
She is now.
Yeah, uh-huh. So...
She wasn't previously.
Mm-hmm. And then in that process, she's... Her idea for this advanced TIE fighter is turned down, but Thrawn hears about it, and we see her get recruited by Thrawn as she is assigned to her outpost, where we see her as the magistrate of this town. That is how we originally meet her in Mandalore. And then the next episode takes... The third episode is a New Republic ambassador comes to the town to try to recruit this planet to be part of the New Republic, and obviously... Elizabeth doesn't like that.
It don't go that well.
So it's three different times in her narrative. Just kind of, it's meant to just, what all these tales, stories do is they just pretty much just flesh out missing parts of character stories.
Gaps.
They're not major stories. They're just kind of providing a little color to the character's background.
Little flesh.
What would be your first dub for this narrative?
You know, it was kind of... Okay, when I say it's cool to see the Dathomirian massacre, it's interesting to see it on screen because, at least in my experience, I don't think we got, like, the full... Is it in Clone Wars? I don't think it's in Clone Wars. I don't think it is. So Battle of Dathomir, Massacre of the Night Sisters is one of them. Oh, it does happen in Clone Wars. I'm dumb. So this is another view of the massacre, which...
I see.
Okay, sorry. I haven't seen Clone Wars in a very long time, and I don't remember a whole lot of it. So, this is not the first time we've seen it. Sorry, fake fan over here. But we see... Morgan's survival of it because at least during Clone Wars the only survivor was Ventress, I believe, maybe a short handful, but from when we learn in Jedi Fallen Order, when you go there as Cal Kestis, you encounter Meryn, who is the last Dathomirian witch on Dathomir, at least of that tribe, and she specifically does not trust Cal Kestis because his lightsaber is blue, and because in her experience she's like 10-12 years old, that is the Grievous had blue and green lightsabers, so she was like, your people killed my kind, and he's like, huh. And so that was, I don't know if that was kind of
big. That transitions nicely into my first one, which is just like, it's a very brief moment, but I actually quite like the depiction of Grievous in this, in that Grievous is always talked about as this major threat, and there are versions. The original 2D animated version of Grievous is actually scary, but most versions of Grievous, he's kind of just this lumbering idiot who talks too much. And I think a big reason why he's actually menacing in this is because he does not talk much at all.
He just laughs.
Yeah.
He cackles.
So I think that this is a good depiction of him. So that's my first dub. I actually don't have any specific L's. I think just my general opinion of the arc might be kind of an L. Do you have L's?
I do have one more dub. It was kind of cool to see Corvus. Which
I was going to go back and forth. I was going to end on dubs because I do have two more dubs.
Oh.
I was going to go back and forth.
Okay.
So I was going to do L's and then come back to dubs.
Okay. Also, my first L, no Callus sighting. kind of disappointing.
Well, that's just a given on anything that doesn't have him. I think if we said that for everything that doesn't have him, it'd be almost everything.
Points off. And so actually did retcon another book series, Dave Filoni, the book Retconner.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Now I've not read the Timothy Zahn books, but this could be hearsay. But this is what I heard. So, cause in the books in this trilogy, it is Thrawn who comes up with this tri-fighter idea. And so now they have attributed this to Morgan. So, as usual, the shows are retconning the books that retconned the old books. So that was kind of a bummer because I know Timothy Zahn. I do not know Timothy Zahn personally, but
what
the author took painstaking care to make sure that his trilogy did not offset canon, like the new Disney canon. So that was a bit of a bummer.
I know I have very little knowledge on the original Expanded Universe, but he created Thrawn originally, I think. So then he wrote a new Thrawn series of books for the new canon.
Yes.
And his stuff has been retconned twice. Hysterical.
Poor Timothy.
I would just say generally about this, I'm overall surprised at my general... It was generally entertaining.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I walked away from this really understanding Morgan Elsbeth as a character. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't say, like, the original Tales of the Jedi, we got to see something we had never seen before, at least in mainline stuff, pre-Sith Dooku. That gave us some information about
he
him.
He aged really hard.
Yeah. We got to see him engaging with Qui-Gon, something we had never seen before. So that was good. We got to see some more intermittent Ahsoka stuff. It did provide some more character development for Ahsoka. This, to me, Morgan Elsbeth is still just this very bland character. The closest she got to being interesting in this was her just being this kind of drone for the Empire and pitching an idea and it getting turned down. That started to be interesting, but doesn't really culminate in much. So that would be my just general thought for the whole thing. What is your next dub?
It was cool to see Corvus, which is the planet that she resided on as a magistrate.
Yeah.
Because when we see it in Mandalorian, it's all burnt.
Yes.
So we get to see it pre-burnt and post-burnt, actually, in this show. But it's just kind of cool to see, like, more of the kind of, I don't know, kind of see it before it was really bad. So I don't know. That's kind of cool. I'm always up for Star Wars introducing new, not desert planets.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. That does transition nicely into my next dub, which is, I think generally I like the fact that they explained why the forest around that town was burned. You see it in Mandalorian already burned, and you just, I think that maybe there is a line from Ahsoka that explains it. Whether it was directly said or not, my implication to me was that it was just as a result of them like using up all the resources.
Yeah.
But it is kind of interesting now when you go back to that episode, you'll see it and we'll know now that this was a
power play.
It was the people of this town tried to rise up against her and they burned the forest as an act of like control over them. So like it even further illustrates what's going on that planet whenever you go back and rewatch that episode now, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I have one more dub. Do you have?
No. I mostly have hmms.
So... This is kind of in between for me because I'm not sure what the intention is. I think it lands on positive regardless of what the intention was. So the discussion between Thrawn and Morgan, Thrawn talks about how the Empire doesn't value like creativity or like free thinking or something like that. And he said that I will. This seems to straight up contradict his actions in the Ahsoka show where he leaves her behind to die effectively, and either they didn't really think that out and they're unintentionally contradicting themselves, or that is thought out and it's telling us something about where Thrawn is.
I think it's also just Thrawn being manipulative.
Sure. Yeah I mean that's fair. I think it's possible I'm reading too much into it, but if this is meant to be an actual indication of his character, which does make sense to me, that makes sense of at least original Thrawn would be someone who oftentimes does not underestimate people and sees the value in things the Empire typically doesn't. That makes sense to me from as a character. What this could be implying is in this moment, he kind of worships the Empire. He has an ego check inherently because he's not in control. There are people above him that he has to answer to, and therefore he...
Yeah, because he's not Grand Admiral.
Exactly. He's driven. By the time you get to Ahsoka... He's now like, I'm the end all be all. I'm everything. So how he treats Morgan could theoretically be a reflection of his ego and how he values others and his intentions. So I think that could be interesting. So on to the second. Did you have any just general thoughts about this Morgan storyline?
I feel like it. Well, is this in my homes? It's kind of in my homes.
Okay, we can so wait to talk about it. So Barriss Offee, do you want to explain who this is?
Barriss Offee, I believe she. I don't know how much she is seen in the prequel trilogy. I'm guessing she's probably in some side shots with Luminara.
Yeah.
In Phantom Menace, maybe Attack of the Clones.
Probably more likely Attack of the Clones, because she would have been too young in Phantom Menace.
Barriss Offee is Master Luminara's apprentice, and Barriss was friends with Ahsoka. However, in Season 5, Barriss has grown disillusioned with the Jedi organization, and so what she does is she betrays them. By doing so, she sets off a bomb in... It's not the Jedi Temple. I think it was actually in the Senate.
Oh, really? Okay. I thought it was the Jedi Temple because that it was such a way that whoever did it had to be a Jedi. It's been a long time since I've saw this character arc.
It's also been
a in my mind, it was the Jedi Temple.
Maybe. And she sets off a bomb somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere on Coruscant.
Where there are Jedi within range.
An act that is generally frowned upon by authority. Yes. authority.
Actually frowned upon by just about anyone, really. So she sets off a bomb, and so the arc is that they don't know who it is, and so she frames Ahsoka for it. And it actually gets so far along that Ahsoka is, like, going to go to trial over it. She's kind of been disinherited by the Jedi, because the Jedi don't believe her either, until it is revealed... I can't remember how exactly it's revealed, but it's revealed that it was Barriss.
Mm-hmm.
She gets arrested.
I think Anakin figures it out.
Yeah, because he dukes it out with her. That was not Anakin fighting. That was Vader fighting.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, it's discovered. She gets arrested. And this is the plot that leads Ahsoka to leave the Jedi, because after Ahsoka is proven innocent, they go, "This was your great trial." And she's like... "You guys suck. I'm leaving." And so we had, since then, Barriss had not been seen in any media. Probably outside of comics and or books that were before Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
Or before the Clone Wars. So this was, we have not seen her. So we have a culmination of her story in this anthology. And so she's in jail, and she happens to look out the window during Order 66, and she can see the Jedi Temple burning from, like, on the horizon. So she gets not, like, broken out. She's released from prison, and we do see a familiar face.
Uh-huh.
Her name is Lynn. She's the fourth sister who we first see in Kenobi. So this first episode is, Barriss being recruited to be an Inquisitor.
Yes.
And I don't know how much you want me to get into this. But this first episode is her becoming an Inquisitor apprentice, proving herself, getting her helmet. Gosh, those helmets are so cool.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't given a number, which was, I'm interested about how the numbering system works with Inquisitors.
Yeah, because we see Merrick in this, who is also from Ahsoka.
Yes.
And we don't know his number either.
No, and we see the Inquisitor that Ahsoka killed in Tales of the Jedi.
And does he also not have a number?
He actually might. He might be 13th brother.
Oh, wow.
Hold on. I've seen him. No, it's 13th sister. What Inquisitor did Ahsoka? Sixth brother. Okay. So she killed... He's sixth brother, but Merrick doesn't have a number that we've ever known. Mm-hmm. Lynn is fourth sister. And actually, the only Inquisitors we see in the series are fourth sister, Barriss, Merrick, and sixth brother.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only ones we see. And we know there's more. We know there are a whole lot more at that time. So she becomes Inquisitor. And then the second episode is them is a fourth sister who's kind of like her master or whatever, I don't know, mentor, and Barriss hunting down a Jedi.
So just to talk a little bit more about what we were talking about with the Inquisitors, the Inquisitor that is in this episode, who is also in the last Tales of the Jedi, his official Wikipedia page is just called Unidentified Inquisitor.
Really?
So he does not have a canonical name.
Are you sure?
That I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right here, and it says Unidentified Inquisitor.
You're in Wikipedia?
Yeah.
So there was the Ahsoka book, which I guess has also technically been decanonized, because in the book she killed Sixth Brother.
Interesting. Do we know who Sixth Brother is?
Bill Valen.
Yeah, he's a different Inquisitor.
Dang, she's dropping them left and right.
That makes sense. That makes sense they would send their first round of Inquisitors after Ahsoka and that they would not be good at stopping her.
Either way, she's killed a lot of Inquisitors. Yes. So Merrick, yeah, we've only seen in Ahsoka and now Tales of the Jedi, mm-hmm. So he was off doing whatever. Whatever, I guess.
Yeah.
And apparently he died at some point.
Yeah, because he's dead. He's like a zombie.
Not totally dead.
Yeah. He's like a Night Sister.
Ghosty goo.
Yeah. Resuscitated. Resurrected.
Yeah.
Minion.
He's a mummy.
And then you have the second episode is Barriss's first mission with Fourth Sister, where she betrays Fourth Sister at the end. And then the third episode is Fourth Sister finding her, what is presumably years later.
Mm-hmm.
And they have kind of a reconciliation in the end. And it culminates with Fourth Sister actually accidentally killing Barriss.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, sorry. I don't know why I acted surprised. I'm stupid.
So we finally get it into Barriss's story. Presumably, right? Like, it's not really ambiguous at the end, was it?
I guess. The only ambiguous is what happens to Fourth Sister.
Yes. I guess the question would be whether this happens before or after it, Kenobi, which we do not know.
I'm guessing it would be after, because Barriss looks older.
She looks quite a bit older. So yeah, it's hard to know exactly when this takes place. This last episode, at least. I went to Kenobi by accident. What was I wanting to go? I wanted to go to the Tales of the Empire. So what is your first dub on Barriss's 3-part story?
Sorry, I'm trying to check something because I'm not sure if we... So the first time we see Barriss Offee is in Attack of the Clones in the back of Chancellor Palpatine's office. She has no lines of dialogue, but you can see her like later at the Battle of Geonosis. I just wanted to have that for reference. My first dub. Honestly, I loved seeing Fourth Sister actually get some character.
Sure.
Because she does not do anything in Kenobi.
Yes.
She's there. She's Fourth Sister. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if she has really any lines.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just Reva and Fifth Brother beefing the whole time and Fourth Sister just like side-eyeing them. She might have had a couple of lines, but we did not really see a whole lot. So I love Inquisitors. They're my jam. So I thought she was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, she's a fairly typical Imperial type. She is more serious about what she's doing and probably more deadly than who was the Inquisitor woman in Rebels?
Seventh Sister.
Seventh Sister. Because Seventh Sister was like one...
Wait.
Constantly hitting on the very underaged Kanan. Nice. Dang it. I said the wrong name.
Ezra.
And was very full of herself and was very... I don't know, almost comic relief to the point, which I'm not criticizing, but just like if we're comparing the characters, she Fourth sister is much more no-nonsense, and as we'll talk about later, is willing to cut people down.
And she is does.
Pretty, is pretty brutal. So yeah, good, interesting character. I think she was. She is interesting to pair with Barriss, who is a lot softer, but like is both soft but also radicalized. So
yeah, I've thought I have that in my
Barriss is clearly a conflicted character.
Yes,
and has very strong dark side to her, but also has a pull towards doing the right thing, trying to do the right thing at least. And so pairing her with this characterization of Four Sisters interesting.
Yes,
I would say. Well. I don't know if this is necessarily a dub, but I enjoyed it with Four Sister killing the entire town when they go hunting for the Jedi.
Except for one child.
Uh-huh. The Jedi, she just kills everyone. And then
she does.
Funny enough, she makes a comment like something like, this is the only way the people will learn.
Yeah.
And it's like, not if you don't leave any witnesses.
There is one witness, it's a child.
Yeah. So that's a dub for me just because I appreciated that it was willing to be brutal. Like,
yeah.
A lot of...
It was instant, too.
Because I don't think Star Wars needs to be dark all the time. I think I like lighthearted Star Wars. But if you're having characters like Inquisitors around, they need to be scary.
Yeah, they need to be scary.
And this is almost a little too much, but I appreciated it. Do you have any L's?
So in the first episode, we see Barriss along with two other recruited Padawans.
Mm-hmm.
Amar, is that his name?
One is named Dante.
Yeah, and Dante looks horrifying. I feel terrible saying it because this is probably like some 15. He looks so scary. I don't know what species he is, but he's a humanoid species. He has like really pale skin and then like red hair growing out like at the top of his head.
It
looks like a clown wig. But it he just...
I don't disagree.
He looks scary. He just looks... You said, how does one look 13 and 55 at the same time?
Well, he's like balding is what he looks like. I don't know if the species grows hair on the top of their head at all, but he has no hair on the top of his head, but he has on the side of his head, so he looks bald, but he also looks younger as well. I only have one L, really, for this. One specific L, at least. And that is the end of it, which is... I felt the way Barriss dies felt very off. Like, I don't care about this character, but as the... Like, it felt very odd to have this character... Okay, so what it is... Barriss is helping a couple with a Force-sensitive baby escape. And Fourth Sister is hunting them down... they have like this cave, this like ice cave that's difficult to traverse and seems to have some sort of a mysticism to it. It feels very similar to the tree on Dagobah. And Fourth Sister gets lost and Barriss is kind of trying to like talk to her. Like she's like talking throughout the, her voice is echoing throughout all around Barriss. She's like
slashing at the walls
with
her lightsaber.
And then the camera is on Fourth Sister, who turns and stabs, and it cuts the other angle, and she stabbed Barriss. That is just not a good... Like, I don't even think it's bad that she died on accident. Just the way that it happened, like, why would you... Is this like approaching a dog who's freaking out? Like, you're going to get bit because it's in the middle of freaking out. Like, she was slashing her lightsaber very erratically. Don't just stand there. Like, you're trying to help her. Like, it... I think even, like, a very short fight. Like, because what earlier happened in the episode is... okay, so in the first episode of this three-part, Barriss fights the Grand Inquisitor. And the Grand Inquisitor is, like, doesn't actually fight her, just dodges the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
While Barriss attacks. And then there's a reflection of that, which I actually think is quite clever, of Barriss doing the same thing to Fourth Sister. Fourth Sister is attacking her, and Barriss just keeps dodging. So it would be interesting, then you have a second fight where Barriss chooses not to dodge and kind of forces Fourth Sister to choose, and Fourth Sister then kills her and regrets it. That would be super interesting. this accidental death to me lacks purpose.
And, you know, I've actually been seeing some people who are not happy. Mm-hmm. Now, I wouldn't say not happy, but they were kind of like, I think there have been a lot of theories that if anyone's going to become an Inquisitor, Barriss will probably end up being an Inquisitor, because with we know, with the knowledge of Palpatine keeping an eye on people who are not great Jedi, but would be good Sith, if, you know, followers, that would be, that was one that seemed self-explanatory. And then this, I've seen some people who are kind of like, of all the pathways they went with Barriss, they're like, oh, she's Inquisitor. Oh, actually,
yeah,
she's not. And that was actually one thing I don't, so she planned out this whole bombing on the Jedi Order.
Oh, sure.
Attempted to kill a bunch of Jedi and or innocents and frame it on someone else, went to jail for it, and then after maybe a year of being an Inquisitor, was like, oh, maybe I was wrong.
Yeah.
And so a lot of things can change for someone in a year, but it was just kind of like, you had this interesting setup of, it felt too easy.
Sure.
And granted, it's an anthology series of less than like maybe 45 minutes, maybe. And so, very quick storytelling, but it's just kind of something that was, it felt, I don't know, I'm guessing they had to end it in a way that would ensure she doesn't show up in anything else. But even then, what this does is this leaves an ambiguous ending for Fourth Sister.
Sure.
Which is kind of like, okay, and we're probably never going to see her again, which is a bummer.
Yeah, I think if we never saw Barriss again, it would be logical that she's dead. But there is some ambiguity to this series. So the second part, and so Barriss fights the Jedi that they're hunting down by herself, convinces the Jedi to kind of give up, and then at that point, Fourth Sister kills the Jedi.
Or injures them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Attempts to kill.
Yeah.
That, at that point, Barriss force pushes her off the mountain, and Barriss then force heals the Jedi. So it's implied that she has that ability and that she saved this. Then the ending of the second part is, and Barriss says to that Jedi in the second part, I'm not going to let you die, or something like that. Fourth Sister is then at the end of the third part seen carrying out Barriss, carrying her out from the caves, and she said, I'm going to get you out of here. So, and we've already seen this show do parallels. But what I'm saying is there is a potential that they're implying that Fourth Sister saves her. It's left ambiguous. I think they do that on purpose so that they can make that decision later if they decide that they want to bring her back.
I do love morally ambiguous Inquisitors.
I guess the question would then be, is the Fourth Sister now convinced that she should not be an Inquisitor anymore? Or does she end up more similar to Merrick, perhaps? A Barriss, I mean, of being, like, brainwashed? Or that could, you know, theoretically could, you know, we've seen with the end of Bad Batch, like, the repurposed clone. There could be something along those lines of Barriss ends up as, like, a brainwashed Inquisitor. It's unknown. It's unclear. But that, I think that there is speculation to be had there.
Yeah.
So that was our first round of... No, so that was your first dub, correct? Was that you liked Fourth Sister?
Yeah, she's
and cool. I said the Fourth Sister massacre was cool.
Dante, horrifying.
Oh, right, how he looked. Horrifying. Yes, and I said that Barriss is dead. Okay, I totally lost where we were. We're back to dubs. What kind of dubs do you have?
I don't know if it's a dub, but it was an interesting... You know, there's so much conversation in Bad Batch about they're taking blood samples. The Empire is still taking blood samples. Like, how many years later? So actually, a significant amount of time has passed because in immediate post Order 66, Barriss is immediately taken in. It's not sure when we leave, but Kenobi takes place in 9 BBY.
Okay.
So there has been like a 5-year time jump at least, I believe.
Okay.
So there's been a couple of years. But so, and then if you're also thinking about it, within like the year or two, Project Necromancer got blasted back to the Stone Age, when Tantus was blown up, so they have no knowledge. So they're still drawing blood. They have started from scratch, so they're still looking for Force-sensitive children, which I thought was kind of like, oh, this wasn't just a Bad Batch thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Granted, we have also seen this in Mandalorian, because 30-something years later,
yeah, yep.
they're still trying. Not 30-something, it would have been like 18, I think.
So, what category are you putting that under?
You know, we got some, not some like loose threads, but some interesting calls the plot line that somehow Palpatine is still trying to come back.
I see. Well, I mean, I can see why you would take that. I just kind of took that as that's the only way they know.
Yes.
They're just going around testing everyone's blood, because I guess it kind of just depends on who's, area you fall into. Like police officers have jurisdiction.
Oh, jurisdiction.
I think it kind of depends on whose jurisdiction counties. You fall under. Certain governors, certain entities, they're just going to kill Force-sensitive people on site. Others, they're going to recruit them to be an inquisitor. Other, they're going to stick them in amber. It kind of just depends on what closest facility.
Depends on how you can catch them alive or dead.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they're just generally, I think it's kind of a figure out if they're Force-sensitive first and then go from there.
Yeah.
Whatever is the most convenient. My final comment on all of this is actually probably my favorite moment in Star Wars this year. Which has only really included Bad Batch. I don't think we haven't really done much more Star Wars outside of that. But Barriss's fight with Dante is amazing.
That was good.
They're brought into a room together. They're both being...
They're on a platform.
Yeah, they're being recruited to be Inquisitors. They're thrown one lightsaber. A laser field drops down around them, and there's a hole between them. And the lightsaber field is getting smaller. So you have very little ground to stand on. And in that moment, you don't know which of them is going to be... Are they both going to refuse? Are they both, like, what's it going
to
be like?
We mentioned, imagine all this hype to bring Barriss back just to kill her off in 5 minutes.
And Dante is surprisingly fast to grab the lightsaber first. I just thought this was a really creative, tense fight.
Because she doesn't kill him with the lightsaber. She force chokes him and snaps his neck.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Which is wild.
Yes. So it's just a cool fight. I like creativity in action. I think that so many fights are just kind of getting from point A to point B, or it's a person that you know is going to win. Like, even though you know Barriss is going to win, you don't know how. You don't know how this is going to end. Barriss could end up at the bottom of that hole and somehow survive. The actual tension of the environment is creative. There's a really cool visual element of how a lot of force fields in Star Wars, they just kind of go through the ground, but this is hitting the ground and like causing a little fire. So there's like
because
a reminder.
I don't know if it catches her arm or her foot and she like, it burns her.
Yeah. There's a reminder that this is not like a force field, but a laser field. So I just love this fight. I think of both this Tales of the Empire, but also between this and Bad Batch, the coolest thing I've seen so far this year in Star Wars. And sets a precedent for one thing I'm excited about with the Acolyte is its action, and I hope the action can be kind of similar to this. Do you have any L's left?
Not particularly.
So do you have any dubs left?
Not particularly.
Okay. Do you have a closing thought on Barriss Offee's story?
You know, not particularly. I thought it was in. I just. I liked the fourth sister characterization.
Sure.
That's really probably my favorite part out of it. So
I do think it had there was a much more obvious story.
I think
to this.
I enjoyed it more than Morgan's.
Yes, totally. There's a much stronger narrative to it. It kind of went predictable with her not necessarily Barriss going back to being a Jedi, but back to being a good person and helping people, which is I'm not against, but it's a little like she was presumably one of the more complicated characters in Star Wars. She was a Jedi. She's one of the first Jedi to see
the corruption
where the corruption was coming from and had gone about it in a bad way.
but that's what makes her a complicated character, and she becomes fairly uncomplicated by the end of this, mm-hmm. which is a little unfortunate, I think. But overall, I mean, you know, good action scene, couple good action scenes. It looked pretty. So
Fourth Sister cool. got added and removed from the falling list.
Yes, yeah.
I was very worried at the end of the second episode or the fifth episode. I was yes. like, well, no, you gave her all this characterization just to throw her off a cliff.
So to our favorite section
somehow
of these sort
Fourth
of reviews.
Sister returned.
Back to our favorite section of these reviews, the list. We can alternate on these. There's a quote from Morgan after she gives her presentation and is talking to someone about the TIE fighter, and just something like, she says, so the Empire is going to steal my ideas and take credit? Yep, that's what's going to happen. Because
in 2 seconds before that, I had just said, yeah. The Empire is stealing a woman's idea and making it their own.
What do you got first up?
Okay, so I'm not nitpicking the animation, but I have two thoughts. There is a very stark difference between the characters that either originated or had most of their design appearances in Clone Wars versus the real people that have to be stylized for it.
Mm-hmm. Like they're taking a real person and yes. putting them in the Clone Wars
style. So, like, Morgan is not... I don't even say... It's like there's... It's not, like, competing. But you have those characters that are just a little bit more Clone Wars. And then the characters that they've had to go, okay, we actually have a real person to base this off of. And Morgan is very obviously one of those characters. Because obviously they're basing her off her actress. But then you have some of these side characters who...
Is Athena being...
Yeah, she's being Athena. Yeah. She stood up and stretched and sat back down. But so, Morgan, but I feel like the starkest difference was between Lynn, Fourth Sister, and Barriss. So you have Lynn, who first originated... And Barriss technically did, too. But there's sure. they're very different stylized. And it's very... So you have Lynn... That I actually thought looked pretty good in the Clone Wars. I thought she looked pretty good in the Clone Wars style. She's very similar sure. to how she appears in live action. And you have Barriss, who has, like, massive eyes yeah, in yeah. comparison. Uh-huh. And even though she originated in live action first, it's yeah. like, because...
She was an extra. Whenever yeah. they translate extras in the Clone Wars style, they take a lot more creative freedom, I think.
But, so they're keeping that, her, like... initial Clone Wars appearance, and so it's very, I don't want to say it's like jarring, but it is a little bit at times where you have like these two characters operating side by side where one is very obviously a cartoon and one is an animated version of a live action person of a real human. So that was yeah. just something that it kept like kind of snapping me out of it, especially when Barriss was an adult.
Yeah.
Too, because there's one thing when you use animation and you have larger eyes for younger characters. That's what you do. That's how you because like proportionally, babies have huge eyes, like compared to the rest of them. Mm-hmm. So that's like yeah. It's an easy way to make someone look young when you give them bigger eyes. But so even when Barriss was older, her eyes were still very large proportionally to the rest of her. It was just, I don't know, it was just something that kept kind of like taking me out of it.
I do not disagree.
That was my first
So Rook is in this. And Rook himself is just kind of a because he's a...
That was our first Starformers post on Reddit. We made a rake joke
about Rook.
If you can find that on Reddit.
Is a little gray man from Rebels, and his upper torso is pretty like... proportionate to a normal human, but he's got short little legs and he moves real fast and he's got a really grovelly voice and he definitely scuttles. And as their budget increases for these animations, they increase the amount of texture on things.
Detail.
And so he is very textured and he's slimy.
Yeah.
And that's a big for me. What do you got next?
Going back to the animation, I noticed this the entire 6 episodes. It felt like so specifically the mouth animations of the characters. It's like every time they opened their mouth or used a word, well, they had like a very like a vowel, a strong word, a word with a strong vowel noise.
Uh-huh.
It's like the mouth shapes automatically like resorted back to the O shape.
Yes.
And it bugged me every single time, because when you speak, you don't automatically form the O shape with every single vowel. And it's like they my guess is they probably had like key bound mouth animations. And maybe they didn't spend a whole lot of time on it, because these are shorter episodes, but it bugged me every single time because there's a character who would say something, a word that did not have an O in it, and the mouth would immediately make the O shape when it shouldn't have. And it honestly actually kind of drove me nuts. It really bugged me.
Rachel, I'm not going to nitpick the animation. Also, Rachel goes on to spend 10 minutes nitpicking the animation. I don't blame you.
It's annoying.
I do not blame you. I also have in this section, my section is just Rachel quotes. Thrawn is talking to Morgan, and he says to Morgan, why did you join? And you just respond to him, I heard you had cute ISB agents. Reference to Callus, of course. What else you got?
So at the end of the third episode, where the plot line is the New Republic has shown up on Corvus to try to get them to join New Republic, and the representative was from Corvus because they recognize her, and she sees some of her old friends, and she mentions like, oh yeah, you know, it's the New Republic, and they're like, the what? So she tells them that the Empire has been defeated, and this is like news to them. That makes total sense. If your magistrate is still Empire established, that she's not going to tell you that the Empire is lost. Mm-hmm. But I also find it interesting as we kind of see how, I think, sorely underprepared the New Republic was as a government for them to come to this still Empire-controlled, technically controlled and led planet.
Yeah, at the very least, Imperial loyal.
Yeah. And just assume that they would join. She's like, I have my guards and some of the like least war experienced men I've ever seen. Yeah.
Very ill-equipped for battle.
Very ill-equipped. So I think that was interesting.
This is the worst example of this could have been an email.
It really was.
The worst possible outcome.
It really was. Just put a red receipt requirement on it so you know she didn't delete it. So it is kind of interesting to see that, like, oh man, the New Republic is really not good at their job. But then you kind of have two sides of it. You have the side of where this like side of, oh, the Empire doesn't exist. The Empire doesn't exist. They're just going to join. It's fine. But then you also have the re-education side of the New Republic.
Yep.
So it's interesting. So, I mean, yeah.
So we already talked about Merrick, but we're going to talk about Merrick again. So Merrick was the other Jedi that Barriss fought. He's a strong for me. He's got pale white skin, no hair on his head, and then like hair, like balding.
You're talking
hair.
About Dante. Merrick is
Dante.
The Inquisitor.
Sorry, Dante. It's growing outward from the side of his head,
horizontally.
Which either it's hair, and he's chosen to dramatically style it so that it stands out sideways. He looks like Pippi Longstockings. Or it's a growth, in which case it's disgusting to look at.
Your wife said it looks like exposed nerve endings.
Yes. He's horrible to look at.
Very fleshy.
I hate looking at him. He's a strong for me.
He's a very strong
What else you got?
This is the third time we've seen Fortress Inquisitorius, and the third time it's looked different. So we first see it in Jedi Fallen Order, and then we see it again in Kenobi, and it looks drastically different, which doesn't particularly make sense because... I believe Fallen Order happens before Kenobi. Yes, because Survivor and Kenobi happen in 9 BBY, and Fallen Order is like 5 years before. So you have this, basically it's a big old spiky pyramid on an ocean planet. It's not quite Pabu, but if Pabu was dark and edgy. Mm-hmm. And so it looked different in Kenobi, and I don't know if that was just a stylistic choice, but I remember there's not really a reason that we know of for it to look different exteriorly. And then we see it differently here, but it's being built, so we'll give them a pass. But if I had a nickel for every time we've seen Fortress Inquisitorius in media and it's looked different, I'd have 3 nickels. But so honestly, it's one of my favorite like little aspects. It is, I think it's just fun. You have all the Inquisitors living together in an apartment complex. I just think it's just funny.
Give us that sitcom.
It's like Friends, but they probably hate each other. Seinfeld.
No, that was the Friends.
No, I was using as an example.
I see. So, kind of related to that, why do all the Inquisitors have unique looks?
Because they look cool and they sell toys.
Yeah, that's the right answer, and that's why it's kind of a I'm just watching this.
Because they know I'm gonna buy them.
You just have all the Inquisitors lined up in this amazing like rack focus shot, and I just go, the most moment that made me really think about this for the first time is they hand Barriss her helmet. It's not even. I think there's a certain degree of. You want these guys to be scary. You want them all to have a different look. You let them design their own looks. They just hand her a helmet, which means it's theoretically still Imperial dictated outfits. It would logically make more sense if they all had a uniform look. But some have helmets, some don't. All the helmets are different.
It's like when you get your work laptop, and it's the same laptop everyone else has, but you get to decide what stickers you put on it.
But they don't. They just hand her a helmet that's different from everyone else's. And they're like radically different too. I don't know. It's not obviously not a bad thing because they do look cool. Kind of a for me. What else you got?
That's kind of it.
Okay, I'll rattle off my last ones here. While the Inquisitor is fighting Barriss, she does a quick turn at him and he like face palms her in the nose, which would theoretically break her nose, and then force pushes her up into the ceiling, which would theoretically break her back. Yeah. It was really aggressive. Really aggressive for someone you're technically training.
I thought of one. Sorry.
Go for it.
Barriss can force heal. Which, like, it isn't, like, the end of the world for me, but that's how she, like, so there's this dying Jedi at the end of the second one. She's like, I'll heal you. So I guess she heals them, and they go on their separate ways, which when Barriss implies to the family, I have a friend who will help you, I'm guessing it's supposed to be the Jedi. Then you could also have this thought, because someone was like, why does she look so old? And someone's like, maybe because she's been healing people for years as the healer. Maybe that probably takes some sort of toll on your body. But I was like, oh, Barriss can force heal. Okay.
All right. That reminds me of another that I didn't write down, but at the end of Morgan's last episode, the New Republic ambassador tries to call for help and falls over.
Oh, yeah.
And it falls out of her hand, and you hear...
She has a communicator that she's trying to convince her friend to take.
Yeah.
And he doesn't.
And you hear... now I'm totally forgetting her name.
Bo-Katan.
Bo-Katan's voice, which makes no sense. Unless they're setting up some other story. Because... Are they implying that Bo-Katan then sent Ahsoka here?
It appears like it.
That's just a weird thread because I don't think there's any connection between Ahsoka and Bo-Katan, is there?
They met in the Clone Wars.
But like as far as like post-war Ahsoka and post-war Bo-Katan.
Oh, well see, I don't know because that could be a story because because what it would require... Oh, gosh. Okay. Okay, hold on.
Okay. Okay, here's the other question.
No, because Ahsoka and Bo-Katan met in the Clone Wars,
yeah,
but they did not interact anytime near Rebels because Ahsoka gets saved,
yeah,
and she is on she's on her Gandalf the White adventure.
Uh-huh.
And so the next time that they would probably theoretically even meet would have to be... before Mando season 1, but
well, here, when, okay, but here's
Ahsoka,
the question.
Ahsoka revealed herself back to Sabine after Return of the Jedi, so I feel like there's a very small window.
Here's a question, because I have a bad memory for these things. in Mandalorian season 2, Mando's trying to find a home for Ahsoka.
For Grogu.
For Grogu. Thank you. He goes and finds Bo-Katan. Who sends him to go look for Ahsoka? Right. Is it Bo-Katan that sends him to go look for Ahsoka?
How
does he end up on that planet? Okay, so there is a reason.
About that.
Okay. So I totally forgot about that.
It's just not
answered
how they got back in contact.
Yeah, so we don't, but there is a precedent for them being connected post war.
I forgot about that.
There it is.
So maybe she was like, hey, something bad is happening. Ahsoka, go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do your
Ahsoka
things.
It's odd,
things.
But there it is.
It was just like, it was the caption, Bo-Katan, what?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Katan, I don't know. However you pronounce the board game is however you pronounce her name.
I hate Katan. The board game of the character, yes.
Yes. I remember one time we played that with some friends in college, and it got tense. It was not fun after a while.
My last two notes here are both Rachel quotes.
Heck yeah.
It just kind of cuts to, so after Barriss becomes a inquisitor, she has her helmet, and under the helmet is kind of like she has like a stocking on her head.
Oh yeah.
And she takes the helmet off and she has a stocking, and you just randomly go, what do you think the hat hair looks like? Very good, very funny. And then as they're climbing the mountains, they're like literally climbing up the mountain to get to the top to fight this Jedi, and you just go, and I just go, I don't remember what was said exactly, but you just go, you know what they could be doing? And you hold your hand up, vroom, 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 because they have the helicopter lightsabers. That was probably my favorite moment of everything related to this.
I would have cried tears of joy if that's what they had done.
Bring because back the lightsaber here's helicopters.
They're climbing up. Do you know how much energy they'd save? Sabercopters? Do you know how much energy they'd save? Do you know how scared me personally, I would be if I'm hiding at the top of the mountain and I see someone Fortnite-ing? Like floating their way up the mountain, I would cry. I'd be like, that's it for me.
That's so good. I love it. Okay. Any final comments on Tales of the Empire before we go on to Shmeem Shminit?
You know, I don't really mind these anthology series. I kind of like them, but I think
I like them more than Bad Batch.
I think the strength of these Tales of stories are when they focus on characters who have not had the spotlight.
Absolutely.
As, like, Dooku. The Dooku one was probably the strongest. Granted, he was a main antagonist in the prequel trilogy, but by not having the spotlight, it's like, these characters that don't quite get as fleshed out,
mm-hmm.
I'd be down for, like, a Tales of the Inquisitors and just, like, seeing Inquisitor shenanigans. I don't know. There's a lot of things that could go on. So I kind of like the anthology series. I feel like, for the most part, they're pretty easy to watch. You know, they come out all at once. You can just kind of put aside 45 minutes to watch one of the arcs. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. So on to Meme Minute, but it's longer than a minute. But is it longer than a meme astrosecond or meme parsec? You decide. Rachel, sorry, wrong name. I'm normally so good about saying the right name. You said you had two videos. What videos you got?
No, I only have one video. I only have one video.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. So this is a Google search that says, help, I accidentally be, and then the search, the automatic response is, help, I accidentally built a Jeep.
What have I done?
Just a Jeep.
And it's Anakin from Revenge of the Sith after he's
so good.
Killed Mace Windu, and he's, what have I done? But he's photoshopped into like a car mechanic shop, and when it flips around to Palpatine, it's a Jeep, and he drops red.
So good. I love it. Okay, and you said you had 12 memes?
12.
Okay, give me two of them.
All right, so we have Rodan, Godzilla, and Anguirus sitting in 2017, and a portal opens. What is that? We're from the future! And you have Monster vs. Godzilla and old Godzilla. And you're like, wow! And then you have new Rodan and old Rodan. No way! This is so cool! And then you have Anguirus. Huh? And there's no one there to visit him from the future.
Poor Anguirus. We'll hopefully get him eventually.
I would love to have him in Monsterverse.
What's your next meme?
Oh, sorry.
You good?
You will feed the bird.
Is that original Rodan?
Yeah.
Does he have eyes that big originally? Is that photoshopped? Yeah. That is awful.
No, that's real. It's just a close-up of old Rodan mask. It's just, you will feed the bird.
So we've gotten this joke many times before, but this is, I think, an especially funny version of it. Live screen casting for Bad Batch concept. Tamora Morrison as Hunter, and it's just Jango Fett, but with like a red line across his head and it's aviator glasses. Tamora Morrison as Crosshair, and it's just like, I actually don't get this one as much, like some sort of like Colombian dictator, but it's got Jango Fett's head on him.
Oh my gosh.
Tamora Morrison as Wrecker, and it's Tamora Morrison's head on The Rock's body holding its teddy bear. And Tamora Morrison as Tech, and it's like slimy Boba Fett but with glasses on and like an anime computer geek's background.
Discord mod.
What else you got?
So this is the format of Anakin and Padme sitting in the Naboo fields,
mm-hmm.
where she's like, oh, hey, something, something question, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Silence. And so it's Wreck-Gar from the original Transformers movies, Anakin, and Ultra Magnus's Padme. You repaired me. You can repair Optimus also, right?
Oh, no.
Silent. You can repair Optimus also, right? this is good.
This is just a... like a medium quality render of minus one Godzilla with like a blank, I would assume like Blender background, that the gray with the stripes, not really important. Just kind of set of like, it's very obvious, a computer render holding a really big cartoonish hamburger. And it just says Bugger.
Bugger. Well, look who decided to join us for Meme Minute.
Well, I hope you've been taking notes, editor Athena. You better be.
If you look like this, DM me immediately.
What was his name? Doc from Godzilla Minus One. Scientist from Godzilla. Nice. Guys, be like, this is my comfort movie, and it's Transformers 2007.
Amen.
What else you got? Yeah, you want to explain what that is?
It's the scene from Godzilla Minus One where Godzilla is chasing them in the fishing boat. But Godzilla Minus One has been replaced with the original Godzilla, who's doing the tail kick. The tail
super kick. So a popular meme format this last week is, we got the first image of the new live-action Superman, and he's like putting on his shoes in the background. There's like a big alien blast happening or something, and people kept photoshopping in the background. Well, this one is Anguirus biting on to Ghidorah.
Superman meme. One of the biggest Superman fans I know. I
have no idea what you're talking about.
So we have just a very high-res image of Kong and Zuko from the last movie.
Just relabeled Kong and Zuko.
It's just a gorilla.
Oh, it's not really. It's an image of a real gorilla just throwing another ape or something. That's really good. Love it. Happy Mother's Day, except for it's Shmi dying, Padme at her grave, and Leia kind of representing that Leia's dead, but she didn't actually die in this
scene.
Imagine
if they put Marva Andor in there. I would have cried. Real tears.
And it was Mother's Day this last weekend.
From Tales of the Empire. Open the gate in the name of the New Republic. Go away or I shall taunt you a second time.
Cute. Very cute.
Which is a Monty Python reference. For the uncultured out there.
All Godzillas are beautiful. It's got. Aww. What do you see there, Rachel?
It's two Godzillas. It's specifically Monster vs. Godzilla and Shin Godzilla figures next to each other, and someone's cat has sat next to it, posed almost identically.
Like the tails are like go up at a very similar angle. It's very cute. What else you got? Oh, jeez. Okay. So you got Yeah, the movie Glass Onion a couple years ago. Well, it says Nos Onion, and it's Boss Nos, the Gungan leader, his head photoshopped. And they put the like little orb of peace next to him. And oh, that's also especially funny because the movie takes place on an island, and they've got like the Naboo waters in the background. That's fun. That's fun. Star Wars Afterlives, Qui-Gon, Force Ghost, Obi-Wan, Force Ghost, Anakin, Force Ghost, Yoda, Force Ghost, Luke, Force Ghost, Leia, Force Ghost, Han. It's a picture of Harrison Ford at a party, like old Harrison Ford at a party, but he's been like painted blue.
Oh my gosh. Fish Batch.
So it's the fish from the tank from Finding Nemo. They've put Hunter's head on the like the leader.
The headband. Yeah, the headband and the hair.
Bubbles has record or crosshairs like eye crosshair. They put Tex goggles on the fish that's scared of everything. They've made Nemo Omega very nice. Wrecker is the puffer fish. I mean, yeah, Wrecker. Uh-huh. That's fun. That's fun. Wait, where are they? Where is that taking?
The Met Gala.
Whoa! That's so bizarre. That's so weird. What a weird confluence of references. Like, imagine you have a meme that's posted on a page and has its tags. How many memes would you have that would be tagged Finding Nemo, Bad Batch, Met Gala? Very few, I think. this is just... I know that Rachel loves these sort of reaction images. It's just like a comic book version of Optimus Prime doing this kind of like, he's not quite doing the PowerPoint. His fingers bent a little more judgmental. And it just says, I saw that.
You sent that to me.
Yes.
I mean, you sent them to me.
Yeah. Uh huh. Hold on. Athena, take a note of that time, Fran. I did a swear.
I did a swear. No swearing in our Christian Minecraft server. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Grips your liver aggressively.
I saw that. To me, it was a little too to you put on the podcast.
Just a picture of Godzilla.
Very angry, legendary Godzilla. All right, this is my last one. It's Oppenheimer, but it says, "Now I am become Transformer, Rise of the Beast, J. Robert Optimus Primer," and he's got Optimus's helmet on.
That a lot. I feel like that you made that one. Are all snakes venomous? That's a myth. Snakes have many ways to kill their prey. And the bottom line.
The Decepticobra found across the world. Oh, it's a snake and his tail is curled up and he's holding the gun that Megatron transforms into. That's really good. I like that a lot.
Oh, that was actually the last one.
Nice.
My last one was an empty template I didn't use.
Oh. Nice. Okay. I'm sending my memes to Rachel. She's sending her memes to me. We are each going to guess which meme the other one made.
Oh, gosh, I keep losing.
As we wait for her, as always, thank you to Caleb Jacoby for our intro and outro music. Props to Rachel for our artwork and Twitter account at Rebels Robots Pod. Props to Athena for probably editing it. I don't know. I mean, it somehow ends up on the internet.
She's currently bathing herself.
You better be ready to edit when we're done. We're almost done.
She's not. She's... Hold on. Sorry. I got too many notes. Type too fast.
And yeah. Just to recap our plans, next time we meet, we will be talking about the first two episodes of
The Acolyte,
the next live-action Star Wars show. Woo! And, we forgot to talk about the Godzilla prequel comic, so I guess I'll talk about that next time.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got Rachel's memes. We've got the monsters visiting from the future. You will feed the bird. You repaired me, right? You can repair Optimus. If you look like this, DM me immediately. Zuko and Kong. Open the gate. I should talk to you a second time. Nos Onion.
These are all very good. Man.
Athena, come help me look at these memes.
Well, I'm going to go... I am going to guess Open the Gate, the New Republic. Go away, I should taunt you a second time.
Yes.
That's good. I would not expect you to make that reference.
Why did you guess it then?
Because I did not see a single Tales of the Empire meme this last week.
This game isn't fun anymore.
We're not trying to trick each other.
I'm trying to.
The game is to see if the other one can pick out our meme. That's the game.
The game is winning.
The game is not to trick. The game is just to see if you can pick out from a bunch of memes.
The game is winning.
Which did the other make? I could have, any of these, I would have believed. They're all very you.
Did you make the Superman meme?
I did not make the Superman meme.
So then did you add on to this one?
No, I found that on accident right as we were starting the game meme minute. It was the first thing that popped up on Twitter. I made the Star Wars Afterlife.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't guess that one because I was like, that's a lot of work to have to go find all those images.
Well, a little higher effort than normal. It originated from, I found that image of Harrison Ford at the party and thought it was so funny.
Man, I was proud of the one I made.
You should be. You should be proud of it. It's good.
But it didn't win, so therefore it goes,
it goes
into the shameful children pile.
You winning or losing has nothing to do with the quality of the meme whatsoever.
It goes into the shameful children.
There is zero correlation between your points of this game, because if we were scoring the memes, your average would be very high. Well, this is week 29 of doing this game. Isn't that crazy?
I don't know. I don't keep track on the weeks, but I can count real quick.
Mm-hmm. I almost doubled down on the first one. I'm really glad I didn't. I love that format of the people from the future visiting the kids. Have you seen the one with the three Transformers, Megatron and RC and Megatron? Oh. It's good.
Two Megatrons?
Oh, Optimus Prime and Megatron.
Man, I had a really good month during November. Last winter, I was doing real good.
All right, so that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. We look forward to hearing from you. You will hear from us, and we would love to hear from you.
That's a threat.
You will be hearing from us.
You'll be hearing from our legal counsel.
You will be hearing...
Who is Athena?
You'll be hearing from... you just... what's her letterhead look like? Can cats give the middle finger? Are they physically capable?
She's got thumbs. They're not very useful, but she's got little thumbs. Come here, Athena. Let me show them. Come here.
So we will be back on June 4th or 5th. And then we are currently planning to do actually weekly recaps of that. But who knows? Because it will also include the 4th of July week. We'll see how it goes.
Is 4th of July on a Wednesday? Or it's a Thursday?
It's a Thursday.
Yeah, because I have to go back to work the next day.
This is Cameron and Rachel signing off, saying, talk may be cheap, but it keeps us sane. Good night, everyone. I hit the wrong button. I didn't hit stop. It was recording.
Starts recording.